It taught him Winterfell's secrets, too. The builders had not even leveled the earth. There were hills and valleys behind the walls of Winterfell. There was a covered bridge that went from the fourth floor of the bell tower across to the second floor of the rookery. Bran knew about that, and he knew that you could get inside the inner wall by the south gate, climb three floors, and run all the way around Winterfell through a narrow tunnel in the stone, and then come out on ground level at the north gate, with 100 feet of wall looming over you. Even Maester Luwin didn't know that, Bran was convinced. His mother was terrified that one day Bran would slip off a wall and kill himself. He told her that he wouldn't, but she never believed him. Once she had made him promise that he would stay on the ground. He had managed to keep that promise for almost a fortnight, miserable every day, until one night he had gone out of the window of his bedroom when his brothers were fast asleep. He confessed his crime the next day in a fit of guilt. Lord Eddard ordered him to the Godswood to cleanse himself. Guards were posted to see that Bran remained there alone all night to reflect on his disobedience. The next morning, Bran was nowhere to be seen. They finally found him fast asleep in the upper branches of the tallest sentinel in the grove. As angry as he was, his father could not help but laugh. "You're not my son," he told Bran when they fetched him down. "You're a squirrel." "So be it. If you must climb, then climb, but try not to let your mother see you." Bran did his best, although he did not think he ever really fooled her. Since his father would not forbid it, she turned to others. Old Nan told him a story about a bad little boy who climbed too high and was struck down by lightning, and how afterwards the crows came to peck out his eyes. Bran was not impressed. There were crows' nests atop the broken tower, where no one ever went but him, and sometimes he filled his pockets with corn before he climbed up there, and the crows ate it right out of his hand. None of them had ever shown the slightest bit of interest in pecking out his eyes. Later, Maester Luwin built a little pottery boy and dressed him in Bran's clothes and flung him off the wall into the yard below, to demonstrate what would happen to Bran if he fell. That had been fun, but afterwards Bran just looked at the maester and said, "I'm not made of clay, and anyhow, I never fall." Then for a while the guards would chase him whenever they saw him on the roofs and try to haul him down. That was the best time of all. It was like playing a game with his brothers, except that Bran always won. None of the guards could climb half as well as Bran, not even Jory. Most of the time they never saw him anyway. People never looked up. That was another thing he liked about climbing. It was almost like being invisible. He liked how it felt, too, pulling himself up a wall, stone by stone, fingers and toes digging hard into the small crevices between. He always took off his boots and went barefoot when he climbed. It made him feel as if he had four hands instead of two. He liked the deep, sweet ache it left in the muscles afterwards. He liked the way the air tasted way up high, sweet and cold as a winter peach. He liked the birds, the crows in the broken tower, the little sparrows that nested in cracks between the stones, the ancient owl that slept in the dusty loft above the old armory. Bran knew them all. Most of all, he liked going places that no one else could go, and seeing the gray sprawl of Winterfell in a way that no one else ever saw it. It made the whole castle Bran's secret place. His favourite haunt was a broken tower. Once had been a watchtower, the tallest in Winterfell. A long time ago, 100 years before even his father had been born, a lightning strike had set it afire. The top third of the structure had collapsed inward, and the tower had never been rebuilt. Sometimes his father sent ratters into the base of the tower to clean out the nests they always found among the jumble of fallen stones and charred and rotten beams. But no one ever got up to the jagged top of the structure now, except Bran and the crows. He knew two ways to get there. You could climb straight up the side of the tower itself, but the stones were loose, the mortar that held them together long gone to ash, and Bran never liked to put his full weight on them. The best way was to start from the godswood, shinny up the tall sentinel, and cross over the armory and the guards' hall, leaping roof to roof, barefoot, so the guards wouldn't hear you overhead. That brought you up to the blind side of the first keep, the oldest part of the castle, a squat round fortress that was taller than it looked. Only rats and spiders live there now, but the old stones still made for good climbing. You could go straight up to where the gargoyles leaned out blindly over empty space, and swing from gargoyle to gargoyle, hand over hand, around to the north side. From there, if you really stretched, you could reach out and pull yourself over to the broken tower where it leaned close. The last part was a scramble up the blackened stones to the eyrie, no more than 10 feet, and then the crows would come round to see if you'd bought any corn. Bran was moving from gargoyle to gargoyle with the ease of long practice when he heard the voices. He was so startled, he almost lost his grip. The first keep had been empty all his life. "I do not like it," a woman was saying. There was a row of windows beneath him, and the voice was drifting out of the last window in his side. "You should be the hand." "Gods forbid," a man's voice replied lazily. "It's not an honor I'd want. There's far too much work involved." Bran hung, listening, suddenly afraid to go on. They might glimpse his feet if he tried to swing by. "Don't you see the danger this puts us in?" the woman said. "Robert loves the man like a brother." "Robert can barely stomach his brothers. Not that I blame him. Stannis would be enough to give anyone indigestion." "Oh, don't play the fool. Stannis and Renly are one thing, and Eddard Stark is quite another. Robert will listen to Stark." "Damn them both. I should have insisted that he name you, but I was certain Stark would refuse him." "We ought to count ourselves fortunate," the man said. "The king might easily have named one of his brothers, or even Littlefinger. Gods help us. Give me honorable enemies rather than ambitious ones, and I'll sleep more easily by night." They were talking about father, Bran realized. He wanted to hear more, a few more feet, but they would see him if he swung out in front of the window. "We will have to watch him carefully," the woman said. "I would sooner watch you," the man said. He sounded bored. "Come back here." "Lord Eddard has never taken any interest in anything that happens south of the Neck," the woman said. "Never, I tell you. He means to move against us. Why else would he leave the seat of his power?" "A 100 reasons, duty, honor. He yearns to write his name large across the book of history, to get away from his wife, or both. Perhaps he just wants to be warm for once in his life." "His wife is Lady Arryn's sister. It's a wonder Lysa was not here to greet us with her accusations." Bran looked down. There was a narrow ledge beneath the window, only a few inches wide. He tried to lower himself toward it. Too far. He would never reach. "You fret too much. Lysa Arryn is a frightened cow. That frightened cow shared John Aaron's bed. But if she knew anything, she would have gone to Robert before she fled King's Landing." "When he had already agreed to foster that weakling son of hers at Casterly Rock, I think not. She knew the boy's life would be hostage to her silence. She may grow bolder now that he's safe atop the eyrie." "Tch, mothers!" The man made the word sound like a curse. "I think birthing does something to your mind. You're all mad." He laughed. It was a bitter sound. "Let Lady Arryn go as bold as she likes. Whatever she knows, whatever she thinks she knows, she has no proof." He paused a moment. Or does she? "Do you think the king will require proof?" the woman said. "I tell you, he loves me not." "And whose fault is that, sweet sister?" Bran studied the ledge. He could drop down. It was too narrow to land on, but if he could catch hold as he fell past, pull himself up. Except that might make a noise, draw them to the window. He was not sure what he was hearing, but he knew it was not meant for his ears. "You are as blind as Robert," the woman was saying. "If you mean I see the same thing," the man said, "I see a man who would sooner die than betray his king." "He betrayed one already, or have you forgotten?" the woman said. "Oh, I don't deny he's loyal to Robert, that's obvious. What happens when Robert dies and Joff takes the throne? And the sooner that comes to pass, the safer we'll all be. My husband grows more restless every day. Having Stark beside him will only make him worse. He's still in love with the sister, the insipid little dead 16-year-old. How long till he decides to put me aside for some new Lyanna?" Bran was suddenly very frightened. He wanted nothing so much as to go back the way he had come, to find his brothers. Only what would he tell them? He had to get closer, Bran realized. He had to see who was talking. The man sighed. "You should think less about the future and more about the pleasures at hand." "Stop that," the woman said. Bran heard the sudden slap of flesh on flesh, then the man's laughter. Bran pulled himself up, climbed over the gargoyle, crawled out along the roof. This was the easy way. He moved across the roof to the next gargoyle, right above the window of the room where they were talking. "All this talk is getting very tiresome, sister," the man said. "Come here and be quiet." Bran sat astride the gargoyle, tightening his legs around it, and swung himself around upside down. He hung by his legs and slowly stretched his head down toward the window. The world seemed strange upside down. A courtyard swam dizzily below him, its stones still wet with melted snow. Bran looked in the window. Inside the room, a man and a woman were wrestling. They were both naked. Bran could not tell who they were. The man's back was to him, and his body screened the woman from view as he pushed her up against a wall. There were soft, wet sounds. Bran realized they were kissing. He watched, wide-eyed and frightened, his breath tight in his throat. The man had a hand down between her legs, and he must have been hurting her there, because the woman started to moan, low in her throat. "Stop it," she said. "Stop it. Stop it, please." But her voice was low and weak, and she did not push him away. Her hands buried themselves in his hair, his tangled golden hair, and pulled his face down to her breast. Bran saw her face. Her eyes were closed, and her mouth was open, moaning. Her golden hair swung from side to side as her head moved back and forth, but still he recognized the queen. He must have made a noise. Suddenly her eyes opened, and she was staring right at him. She screamed. Everything happened at once then. The woman pushed the man away wildly, shouting and pointing. Bran tried to pull himself up, bending double as he reached for the gargoyle. He was in too much of a hurry. His hand scraped uselessly across the smooth stone, and in his panic his leg slipped, and suddenly he was falling. There was an instant of vertigo, a sickening lurch as the window flashed past. He shot out a hand, grabbed for the ledge, lost it, caught it again with his other hand. He swung against the building hard. The impact took the breath out of him. Bran dangled, one-handed, panting. Faces appeared in the window above him. The queen, and now Bran recognized the man beside her. They looked as much alike as reflections in a mirror. "He saw us," the woman said shrilly. "So he did," the man said. Brian's fingers started to slip. He grabbed the ledge with his other hand. Fingernails dug into the unyielding stone. The man reached down. "Take my hand," he said, "before you fall." Bran seized his arm and held on tight with all his strength. The man yanked him up to the ledge. "What are you doing?" the woman demanded. The man ignored her. He was very strong. He stood Bran up on the sill. "How old are you, boy?" Seven, Bran said, shaking with relief. His fingers had dug deep gouges in the man's forearm. He let go sheepishly. The man looked over at the woman. "The things I do for love," he said, with loathing. He gave Bran a shove. Screaming, Bran fell backward out of the window into empty air. There was nothing to grab onto. The courtyard rushed up to meet him. somewhere in the distance, a wolf was howling. Crows circled the broken tower, waiting for corn. Tyrion. Somewhere in the great stone maze of Winterfell, a wolf howled. The sound hung over the castle like a flag of mourning. Tyrion Lannister looked up from his books and shivered, though the library was snug and warm. Something about the howling of a wolf took a man right out of his here and now and left him in a dark forest of the mind, running naked before the pack. When the direwolf howled again, Tyrion shut the heavy leather-bound cover of the book he was reading, a 100-year-old discourse on the changing of the seasons by a long-dead maester. He covered a yawn with the back of his hand. His reading lamp was flickering, its all but gone as dawnlight leaked through the high windows. He had been at it all night. Well, that was nothing new. Tyrion Lannister was not much a one for sleeping. His legs were stiff and sore as he eased down off the bench. He massaged some life back into them and limped heavily to the table where the Septon was snoring softly, his head pillowed on an open book in front of him. Tyrion glanced at the title. A Life of the Grand Maester Æthelmure, no wonder. "Sheel," he said softly. The young man jerked up, blinking, confused, the crystal of his order swinging wildly on its silver chain. "I'm off to break my fast. See that you return the books to the shelves, and be gentle with Valyrian scrolls. The parchment is very dry. Armadon's Engines of War is quite rare, and yours is the only complete copy I've ever seen." Shale gaped at him, still half asleep. Patiently, Tyrion repeated his instructions, then clapped the Septon on the shoulder and left him to his tasks. Outside, Tyrion swallowed a lungful of cold morning air and began his laborious descent of the steep stone steps that corkscrewed around the exterior of the library tower. It was slow going. The steps were cut high and narrow, while his legs were short and twisted. The rising sun had not yet cleared the walls of Winterfell, but the men were already hard at it in the yard below. Sandor Clegane's rasping voice drifted up to him. "The boy's a long time dying. I wish he'd be quicker about it." Tyrion glanced down and saw the hounds standing with Yon Joffrey as squires swarmed around them. "At least he dies quietly," the prince replied. "It's the wolf that makes the noise. I could scarcely sleep last night." Clegane cast a long shadow over the hard-packed earth as his squire lowered the black helm over his head. "I could silence a creature, if it please you," he said through his open visor. The boy placed a long sword in his hand. He tested the weight of it, slicing at the cold morning air. Behind him, the yard rang to the clangor of steel on steel. The notion seemed to delight the prince. "There, send a dog to kill a dog," he exclaimed. "Winterfell is so infested with wolves, the Starks would never miss one." Tyrion hopped off the last step onto the yard. "I beg to differ, nephew," he said. "The Starks can count past six, unlike some princes I might name." Joffrey had the grace at least to blush. "A voice from nowhere," Sandor said. He peered through his helm, looking this way and that. "Spirits of the air!" The prince laughed, as he always laughed when his bodyguard did this mummer's farce. Tyrion was used to it. "Down there!" The tall man peered down at the ground and pretended to notice him. "The little Lord Tyrion," he said. "My pardons, I did not see you standing there." "I'm in no mood for your insolence today." Tyrion turned to his nephew. "Joffrey, it is past time you called on Lord Eddard and his lady to offer them your comfort." Joffrey looked as petulant as only a boy prince can look. "What good will my comfort do them?" "None," Tyrion said. "Yet it is expected of you. Your absence has been noted." "The Stark boy is nothing to me," Joffrey said. "I cannot avoid the wailing of women." Tyrion Lannister reached up and slapped his nephew hard across the face. The boy's cheek began to redden. "One word," Tyrion said, "and I will hit you again." "I'm going to tell Mother," Joffrey exclaimed. Tyrion hit him again. Now both cheeks flamed. You tell your mother, Tyrion told him, but first you get yourself to Lord and Lady Stark, and you fall to your knees in front of them, and you tell them how very sorry you are, and that you're at their service if there is the slightest thing you can do for them or theirs in this desperate hour, and that all your prayers go with them. Do you understand? Do you? The boy looked as though he was going to cry. Instead, he managed a weak nod. Then he turned and fled headlong from the yard, holding his cheek. Tyrion watched him run. A shadow fell across his face. He turned to find Clegane looming overhead like a cliff. His soot-dark armor seemed to blot out the sun. He had lowered the visor over his helm. It was fashioned in the likeness of a snarling black hound, fearsome to behold. But Tyrion had always thought it a great improvement over Clegane's hideously burned face. "The prince will remember that, little lord." The helm turned his laugh into a hollow rumble. "I pray he does," Tyrion Lannister replied. "If he forgets, be a good dog and remind him." He glanced around the courtyard. "Do you know where I might find my brother? Breaking fast with the queen." "Ah," Tyrion said. He gave Sandor Clegane a perfunctory nod and walked away as briskly as his stunted legs would carry him, whistling. He pitied the first knight to try the hound today. The man did have a temper. A cold, cheerless meal had been laid out in the morning room of the guest house. Jaime sat at table, and Cersei and the children talking in low, hushed voices. "Is Robert still abed?" Tyrion asked as he seated himself, uninvited, at the table. His sister peered at him with the same expression of faint distaste she had worn since the day he was born. "The king has not slept at all," she told him. "He is with Lord Eddard. He has taken their sorrow deeply to heart." "He has a large heart, our Robert," Jaime said with a lazy smile. There was very little that Jaime took seriously. Tyrion knew that about his brother and forgave it. During all the terrible long years of his childhood, only Jaime had ever shown him the smallest measure of affection or respect, and for that Tyrion was willing to forgive him most anything. A servant approached. "Bread," Tyrion told him, "and two of those little fish, and a mug of that good dark beer to wash them down. Oh, and some bacon. Burn it until it turns black." The man bowed and moved off. Tyrion looked back to his siblings. Twins, male and female. They looked very much the part this morning. Both had chosen a deep green that matched their eyes. Their blonde curls were all a fashionable tumble, and gold ornaments shone at wrists and fingers and throats. Tyrion wondered what it would be like to have a twin, and decided that he would rather not know. Bad enough to face himself in a looking-glass every day. Another him was a thought too dreadful to contemplate. Prince Tommen stood up. "Do you have news of Bran, uncle?" "I stopped by their sick room last night," Tyrion announced. "There was no change. The maester thought that was a hopeful sign." "I don't want Brandon to die," Tommen said timorously. "He was a sweet boy. Not like his brother, but then Jaime and Tyrion were somewhat less than peas in a pod themselves." "Lord Eddard had a brother named Brandon as well," Jaime mused. "One of the hostages murdered by Targaryen. It seems to be an unlucky name." "Oh, not so unlucky as all that, surely," Tyrion said. The servant brought his plate. He ripped off a chunk of black bread. Cersei was studying him warily. "What do you mean?" Tyrion gave her a crooked smile. "Why, only that Tommen may get his wish. The maester thinks the boy may yet live." He took a sip of beer. Marcella gave a happy gasp, and Tommen smiled nervously, but it was not the children Tyrion was watching. The glance that passed between Jaime and Cersei lasted no more than a second, but he did not miss it. Then his sister dropped her gaze to the table. "That is no mercy. These northern guards are cruel to let the child linger in such pain." "What were the maester's words?" Jaime asked. The bacon crunched when he bit into it. Tyrion chewed thoughtfully for a moment and said, "He thinks that if the boy were going to die, he would have done so already. It has been 4 days with no change." "Will Bran get better, uncle?" little Myrcella asked. She had all of her mother's beauty, but none of her nature.